U.S. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito said last week that the court's 2015 decision that legalized same-sex marriage across the country has had, quote, ruinous consequences for religious liberty. The written remarks from the justices were included in the court's decision not to accept a case involving a county clerk in Kentucky who had refused to issue marriage certificates to same-sex couples. Despite that, Thomas and Alito said it's up to the court to act on the issue of religious liberty and gay marriage in the future. This comes as Judge Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation process is set to begin. She could give the court a 6-3 conservative majority. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that religious liberty is threatened in any way by same-sex marriage? Should the Supreme Court be talking about taking another look at these issues? Do you worry about how religious liberty will be defined by a potentially more conservative court in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kimmy King is a professor of political science at the University of North Texas. She's an expert on civil liberties and a legal analyst. Kimmy, good to have you back with us.
Good to be here.
Well, let's start, Kimmy, with these written comments from Justice Thomas on behalf of himself and Justice Alito. What's your reaction to them taking this opportunity to critique this big but older ruling in pretty strong terms?
Yes, and what's really striking about it is the fact that both Thomas and Alito agreed that the court should not take the case because they found that it doesn't cleanly present issues that would have depended upon Obergefell v. Hodges back from 2015. And the court typically strategically uses cases to determine its precedent. And so for that reason, it didn't feel like this was the case. But the fact that they went out of their way to clearly come in and do a smackdown on Obergefell v. Hodges and continue to raise the specter that this is going to be a continuing process, and they use the word, victims, that there are victims that come about through this, and they called it cavalier treatment. And so it's an indication that they're signaling that they want to shift the debate back to Obergefell and the issue of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Is this a sign that they could go back, maybe with a new justice on board? Now, I guess two, actually, since that decision, three, I keep losing count, and review that case itself and could say, oh, nope, we changed our mind. Same-sex marriage is no longer required to be legal in all states. Or is this a sign that they want to further review, exemptions for religious organizations or people of faiths to not participate in same-sex marriages?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that there are other justices who did not sign on, like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Roberts. And so what I think most people can take away from that is this idea that there is a coalition forming and that Thomas and Alito are at the heart of that coalition. They're trying to signal to their other fellow conservative justices, look, this is how we think. We need to keep our eyes on the right case that would come forward to clearly address this issue because of the concerns about the clash between the values of marriage equality and the values of religious liberty.
But that said, does that mean we're going to narrow down more religious liberty protections, or the decision in 2015 could be overturned, the one that allowed same-sex marriage in all states?
Well, that's one of the really interesting things, right? Because even though Roberts is a conservative and he dissented in the Obergefell cases, Roberts is also the court's leader. He also believes very strongly in stare decisis, this idea of let the decision stand and that we follow precedent and that courts shouldn't be coming in and overturning and changing laws every time they turn around. And so it's the extent to which he can convince folks like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh to go along with him that there needs to be a middle ground here when looking at marriage equality and religious liberty, because they're both competing values.
Talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas about the U.S. Supreme Court, two conservative justices saying, hey, we got things, or the court as a whole got things wrong when it allowed same-sex marriage in every state, raising concerns about religious liberties and the notion that they could revisit that case. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller. Ricky is with us in Sheboygan. Ricky, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Ricky?
Well, I kind of explained it. I've never called in before.
Thanks for calling.
Every time this subject comes up, my first response is always, I didn't think we were supposed to be making laws based off of religion. So I understand religious liberty would be under the heading maybe of, well, my religion says marriage is between a man and a woman, therefore I don't want to serve whatever situation it might be. And that maybe could be that person's prerogative. But I guess I just get so frustrated of how come the central issue of gay marriage seems to always come back to religion when I didn't think any of our laws should be based off of religion.
Ricky, thanks so much for that call. And Kimmy, she really gets to the heart of the dispute here. The argument, some people would agree that, we shouldn't use religious principles in determining whether same-sex marriage should be recognized. But then the argument that, well, does this infringe on other people's religious liberties, which are protected under the Bill of Rights? Can you talk about how we try to sort that out? It's been a long, changing issue.
Yeah, such a great question, first-time caller. That's excellent. I got to tell you, it's because of the tension that our founders built into the First Amendment to the Constitution. The First Amendment is really about the marketplace of ideas, whether it's free speech or free press or religious liberty. And within religious liberty, there are two clauses. The Establishment Clause, which prohibits government from establishing religion, and that's more what your caller, what Ricky's addressing. But then there's the Free Exercise Clause that says you can't interfere with someone's religious freedom. And so it forces government to walk this neutral line, and we have to look at the diverse range of ways in which religion operates in our society. And it goes to the heart of the issue that the First Amendment is about public activity, what government does. What private individuals do is separate. So government can't establish a religion, but they can't interfere with the private religious rights of others. So when you start to look at things like giving scholarship aid to people going to private schools, both religious and non-religious, should government penalize religious educational institutions if there are low-income children in those schools that need those school vouchers? And so in a court case in 2002, the court said, look, we need to recognize that tension and you shouldn't be discriminated against because of religion. You're a low-income parent and they're trying to give you money for that. And you've chosen to go to a religious school. You get that kind of freedom. So that's one example. There are others, and I can address them as we keep going through with the callers.
Let's bring up another caller. Thank you so much for calling in for the first time there. Carla joins us now in Madison. Carla, hi. Oop, do we have you there, Carla? Not hearing Carla. Her question, Kimmy, is she's asking to explain whose religious liberties are infringed or diminished by the gay marriage ruling, which is kind of at the heart, it sounds like, of what the two justices were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And so it comes typically in the form of services that are provided, right? Can you force a church to carry out a same-sex marriage like the Catholic Church at odds with that? In the Masterpiece Cake Shop, you had a baker who was asked to make a same-sex cake. And he held himself out to the public so you could have that kind of government regulation. The city there had a public accommodations law that said you can't discriminate based on marriage equality. And he said, but I can't. You're trying to get a message from me that same-sex marriage is okay. And I'm being punished, you know, by this law that says I'm discriminating when all I'm doing is holding on to my religious values. So the court found in that case that, in fact, the city had gone out of its way in its and the Human Rights Commission, which heard the case, to be more specific, to, in essence, sanction him for those beliefs. And the court has a case up this term that they're going to hear oral arguments on in Fulton versus City of Philadelphia. And that deals with Catholic charities. And I want to make sure we talk about that before this segment is over.
Let's do it right now.
So in Fulton versus City of Philadelphia, We're slated for November 4th oral arguments. Catholic Charities has indicated that they're not going to place foster kids in same-sex homes. So this is a great example of the last caller's kind of where is all this coming from, that private and public sector are running into each other, because you have a number of children who are in foster care. They've been through the system. Nobody wants these children. You have loving same-sex couples that may want them. And there are a bunch of cases in the lower courts that evaluate the extent to which can a private religious charity say, we're sorry, we're not going to place folks in same-sex homes. Please let us continue to work with the government because these children need to be placed. And so that case really offers the most sweeping opportunity to date for the Supreme Court to address this issue of whether Masterpiece Cake Shop, you know, was the correct decision as we expand the thinking, or is it okay if the city says, well, we would have turned away a secular agency, a non-religious agency that was trying to discriminate in this way, or will they completely redo jurisprudence that goes back to the 1990s that says, look, when you have a neutral and generally applicable law, you can't escape it, Catholic Charities. This is about treating all couples equally, no matter who they are.
We're talking to Kimmy King right now, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, looking at the issue of religious liberty after two Supreme Court justices wrote that the 2015 decision that legalized same-sex marriage was a mistake, they said, that hurt religious freedoms. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with Justices Alito and Thomas that the same-sex marriage ruling does interfere with religious liberty? Should the court revisit this issue again in the near future? Are you concerned or hopeful about what a more conservative court might have to say about all of this? Have any of these issues affected your life directly? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, looking at the issue of religious liberty and how the Supreme Court defines it and may want to revisit it along with the 2015 decision that allowed same-sex marriage in all states. You can join in with your thoughts, questions, and reactions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before, Kimmy, we go back to our callers. It seems that this letter or this note from the two justices here also raised the issue that they say the court legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide was the wrong way to go. If it was going to happen, they said it should have been done by state legislatures. It should have been a legislative issue, not a court issue. How important an argument is that?
It is important because remember that states can give you more rights. They just can't give you less. But you have to establish that minimum federal floor if there's some kind of federal right that is implicated. But many state constitutions and part of the marriage equality movement really came about because courts in the various states across the country just systematically went through and chopped down laws that were prohibiting marriage equality. And it was almost like the country reached a tipping point where you had a majority of states that were being more supportive. And in that context, then, you saw those rights really take hold. And for that reason, many people were very concerned that the court came in and did that kind of sweeping away of it. It's really actually similar to some of the arguments that Justice Ginsburg made about Roe v. Wade, that perhaps some of the criticisms of Roe v. Wade wouldn't have been so stark if they just let the state legislatures go through and on a state-by-state basis decide what was best for their state. But that's part of the nature of the debate about constitutional rights.
And the same process was used, if I'm not mistaken, Kimmy, with interracial marriage. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down state bans on interracial marriage and found that they were unconstitutional. A similar process?
Yes, absolutely. And here's where it really gets difficult, because in Loving versus Virginia back in the 1960s, the Supreme Court held that marriage is a fundamental right. How do you say that it's a fundamental right for interracial couples, but you don't say it's a fundamental right for same-sex couples? And it is that concern about having inconsistency. And those who are opposed to marriage equality will tell you it's because of the difference in religious liberty, and that's what makes marriage equality different. But that's missing the historical debate that went on about interracial marriage. You have to remember that very conservative and typically evangelical churches also had guidelines prohibiting interracial marriage well into the 1980s. So this issue of how you view what marriage is and who is entitled to that marriage is difficult. And I'm going to push it a little bit harder. What about polygamous marriage? The court said going way back when to the 1800s that you do have the ability to prohibit polygamous marriage. And that clearly went up against the beliefs of the Mormon church at that time. So this is a very complicated area where all the different segments of society are pushing up against each other in terms of their rights and liberties under the Constitution.
Talk about religious liberty, a Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage, and two Supreme Court justices who want to revisit that. Kimmy King with us from the University of North Texas. Let's go back to your calls now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. I think we need to take a more pragmatic approach on this, and they need to just establish a bright line rule that says that two legal age consenting adults should have the right to get married, period, provided they're not married to anyone else or any other things like that. And for the businesses that don't want to deal with that, they shouldn't be forced, or the, you know, the churches, they shouldn't be forced to marry people or, you know, provide their services. And so if it is a homosexual couple, then they should just have to, you know, they'll have to work with businesses that are willing to and, you know, able to work with them. And if, you know, a church doesn't want to marry it, that's on them, you know, because that's their religious principles. But the state should allow and should recognize, like, marriage is marriage.
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. So for churches, Kimmy, they do have that right to opt out. Am I correct on that?
Well, so this is what we're litigating in cases across the country right now, because to the extent that you're a public accommodation, so what's a public accommodation? It's any private business which holds itself out to the public to provide services to the public. So we have public accommodation laws that say you have to treat people equally. In fact, the way in which we integrated restaurants and hotels was really as a result of the Civil Rights Act, which said, look, the federal government can regulate public accommodations. And those of you that think you don't want to serve Black people, you know, too bad, you're going to have to do it. And there's an entire body of law throughout the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s that uses public accommodations laws to say, sorry, government gets to regulate you for that. And so your caller's raising such a good point that that's the pragmatic middle ground. The difficulty becomes stare decisis and precedent. Let's take the logical conclusion of that about public accommodations. Does that mean that, say, for example, I'm a white supremacist, I'm entitled to my beliefs, and I do not want to serve Black people in my store? Am I allowed to do that? Because the logic of the marriage equality question that he's asking, or that pragmatic approach, which I absolutely understand, becomes very complicated when you put it in the context of other protected categories. And that's what we're talking about, groups of protected persons and how they can seek the law to protect them, and when will the law cover them.
Let's bring on one more caller. Ben is with us in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hi. Religious liberty is a straw dog that the Christian nationalists that have become very powerful in this country are using. Your guest was talking about the educational issue. Under the CARES Act and this administration with Betsy DeVos, churches have received at least $7.5 billion of taxpayers' money to support their operations and pay their employees, which is unconstitutional by my reading. As far as issue of same-sex marriage, let's not remember that it was only 40 or 50 some years ago that homosexuality was illegal in many states, and homosexuals were forced to undergo castration and lobotomies, among other procedures, because of their sexual orientation. So Christians are morally uncomfortable with having to deal with black people or homosexuals or people that do not agree with their moral standings.
Ben, I'm going to jump in because we just have a few moments left. Let's take that first point, Ben saying unconstitutional if churches take federal money, in this case, the CARES Act money. There could be an argument, though, that if you exclude a church as an employer because it's a church, that might also be a violation of the Constitution. Right, Kimmy?
Yeah, so the way in which it's such a good point that he's pointing out, because the way in which the court resolves that is that it's incumbent upon those elected officials. That's why elections matter, to change that, that it's those officials who are designating that money to them. Understand that what's happening in the funding of those cases is that they're being given funds as a religious organization to carry out non-religious activities like, you know, providing counseling, marriage counseling, and adoption services, and they just happen to be religious groups. So it's almost like saying they're getting the same piece of the pie, but the issue is that they can't proselytize for it. That's where it becomes the issue. Now, there's all kinds of allegations that there are churches who do improperly use that money. I don't want to misrepresent the caller's concern about this case, about the issue of the amount of monies that go out there. But it's that equal, the idea that there's equal ability to apply for that money and not discriminating as long as you're not advancing a religious cause. And that's why we're really in this mess. And I want to put a really fine point. It's not just 40 or 50 years ago in my home, and it's only been within the last 18 years that homosexual behavior was finally, the criminal laws on the books were done away with. It was criminal behavior, and it was exclusively homosexual behavior that targeted, we need to be clear, it was gay men that were targeted with those laws. So it's not even been two decades since we've leveled the playing field for how we treat LGBTQ couples.
Kimmy, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
You betcha. Love Public Radio.
That's Kimmy King talking about the Supreme Court.